Theodore has no more bitter enemy than the judge since he plundered and murdered at Metraha last summer. Anyway, we have no choice. So come, and keep your ears open for the monastery bell."
We set off across the plain, and as we went, skirting well wide of the village, she told me of Theodore's crowning infamy at Metraha, an island in Lake Tana which had been a holy place of sanctuary from time immemorial, and consequently a haven much used by merchants to deposit their treasures. St. Paul's crossed with the Bank of England, if you like. Theodore had gained access to it by treachery, looted its vast store of gold, silver, grains, and precious stuff, and then herded the inhabitants, priests, merchants, women, and children, into the principal buildings, and burned them to death.
"So, we ran no risk of betrayal to Theodore. Rather," says Oliver complacently, "will the Holy Father show all kindness and respect to a noble lady of Tigre, bound for the court of the Queen of the Galas, who had the misfortune to be robbed of her caravan by Sudani bandits, who murdered her servants, and would assuredly have slain her, or worse, had she not escaped by night with her faithful Hindi attendant. Hence her destitute condition."
Lucky for her, she was able to deck her destitution with a few choice trinkets. Oh, and a purse of dollars,
which she was fortunate to be able to carry away with her, and from which she will make a generous gift to the monastery's alms chest. "If that does not move their pity," says she, "I know nothing of Christian priests. Besides, these would be provincial simpletons, probably awe-stricken in the presence of rank."
I didn't doubt that, but one snag occurred to me. They're Coptic Christians, aren't they? Suppose they spot you for a gala. After all, you're on your way to Mastiat. Can you pass as a Christian? She gave me her superior smile, and drew from the bosom of her tunic one of the necklaces she pinched from the Sudanese hoard, a fine cord of pale blue silk, skilfully intertwined with gold and silver threads.
"This is called Matab. Is it not beautiful? All Christians of Habesh wear them from their baptism. It is the first thing those Christos look for in each other. And this one, as you see, is of the most precious kind, such as only the high-born and wealthy would wear.
Hey, but listen, the bell."
It was tolling faintly, but stopped as we entered the little valley in which stood a plain adobe building of no great size, walled with an arched gateway, and surrounded by plots too small to be called fields, in which white-robed abs were digging and hoeing without enthusiasm. They stopped to stare as the high-born Lady of Tigre, a striking figure in her scanty tunic, boots, and veiled fillet, sashayed towards the gate with her faithful Hindi attendant throwing a chest as he followed dutifully in her wake. Chanting greeted us as we passed through the archway into a courtyard where a crowd of robed and turbaned jossers were waking the echoes with what I learned later was a Coptic psalm, and plainly we were intruding on a service, or, as it proved, a rehearsal for one. Palm Sunday, no less, which fell a week hence. The turbaned lads were priests bearing strange long wands, with heads like crutches, while the commonalty and sundry infants carried palm fronds. To the fore was a dignified old file called the Abba, which I suppose is abbot. He wore a very stylish yellow leather coat and carried a curious article like a catapult with abacus beads between its arms, which he waved from time to time. In attendance were a priest bearing a fancy sort of decorated cross, a tiny chico with a bell as big as himself, and two deacons holding up an enormous Bible. Even as we appeared, the singing stopped, and the Abba began to read from the Bible, but left off in some confusion when one of the deacons drew his attention to Ulaba Walk, who was listening attentively, hand on hip, nodding approval. Everyone goggled at her, as well they might, for she was posed like the Queen of Sheba, waving a graceful hand to them to continue, and then turning aside to seat herself on a bench by the gateway. The Abba, who'd been taken flat aback, it dawned on me that there wasn't another female in the courtyard, steadied up and began reading again in a shaky falsetto, but shooting little disturbed glances in Ulaba's direction as she crossed her legs and sat back, finger on cheek, gently smiling, as though she were watching a show performed for her benefit. The reading finished, cut short, I suspect, the Abber and his gang retired through an inner doorway, shooting more little glasses.